Welcome to Addicted to Murder. This is Courtney, licensed professional counselor with over a decade of experience.
This is Trisha, and I'm going to go to a Marlish baby shower later today.
Marlish? That sounds fun.
It means casual and easygoing.
Oh, that does sound fun.
It's the new thing I've found is that they make baby showers now where, like, the men go.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I'm, you know, dating myself a little bit, but the baby showers I went to when I was, you know, young, when my friends were having their first kids, it was not like that. It was just girls. And I was just telling you how baby showers are not my favorite thing to do. And I don't know. I mean, you don't have kids either. I don't know if it's necessarily because I don't have kids or what, but I don't know what it is about them. They're just not my favorite things to do. But I'm going to this one because I care for Kelsey.
Good.
And Kelsey's a longtime listener. I mean, long time is as long as she's known me. So,
right, yeah. I like baby showers. I've thrown a few baby showers. So,
I've thrown a gender reveal, and that was fun. Mm. We didn't do anything, you know, crazy. Mm-hmm. It was like I got a bottle of pink champagne and a bottle of blue champagne.
Got it.
And they unwrapped the bottle that it was, and it was a boy, so they unwrapped a bottle of blue champagne, and then they poured it. Oh. And it was, like, easy and cute, and the dad was super excited, but the mom was a little more like, I wanted a girl, and you could see it on her face. It was pretty funny. So I don't know. Those gender reveals, like, they could be hit or miss.
Right, that's true.
But that was fun.
And I'm glad they didn't do something like explode a bunch of confetti into nature that will never biodegrade.
Or, like, accidentally start a fire.
Right.
Which happens.
Yes. When you use, like, fireworks or smoke bombs and stuff.
Yeah. And it's no good, especially here. Fire's a bad word in Oregon.
I know. Yeah. But champagne.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't like that? And I just was on a, like, do they make blue champagne? And sure as shit, they do.
Oh.
Yeah. It wasn't, like, a special bottle or anything. Like, I mean, specially made or anything. I got it, like, World Market.
Huh.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Anyhow, there is blue champagne out there.
Good to know.
Champagne colored with food dye, but still. All right. So we are doing Jeffrey Dahmer part two today, and we'll start after Courtney asks her question.
So, Trisha, my question for you today is, what is something that you've done before that you will never do again?
We're talking about, like, a daring event or something.
Not necessarily. It could be something small.
Something I will never do again. I will never watch the movie Dancer in the Dark again with Bjork.
Oh, okay.
It was the saddest movie I ever, maybe have ever seen.
Oh.
It was awful. And I will never watch it again.
Okay. Noted.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably not very exciting.
But that's okay.
On the spot, I couldn't think of... I'm sure there's a ton of shit that I wouldn't do again, but I couldn't think of anything. What about you?
I will never use Nair to remove hair.
I've never used that, but I remember those commercials. Who wears shorts?
Yeah. So I tried it once when I was, like, a teenager, and it turns out I have sensitive skin, and it gave me chemical burns.
Where did you use it?
On my legs.
Oh, okay. At least it wasn't in your private area.
No, that's true. I definitely tested my legs first, but I'm like, nope, this burns, and did not actually remove any hair.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been curious about exfoliatories, whatever those creams are, but I've never done it.
Got it. Maybe they've improved the formula or something, but I'm just not willing to try again. No.
You've been traumatized by it.
I have.
I wax. Do you ever wax?
I've never waxed.
Like, not even your eyebrows?
No.
Oh. I've never waxed my legs, but I've waxed other parts. Mm. It hurts like a mother, but works. I didn't get burns.
Well, that's probably good.
Yeah. And then there's sugaring, which, from what I understand, sugaring adheres only to the hair.
And not wax to the skin?
Adheres to the hair and the skin. But they both freaking hurt. Either way, you're pulling the hair out.
Right.
So, yeah. But I think sugaring is, for, like, maybe the better way to go, but I'm not an esthetician, so I don't know for sure.
I think I'm just going to stick to shaving.
Yeah.
For now.
I mean, go with what works.
Yeah.
If it ain't broke, don't fix.
Exactly. Right? Yep.
Okay. Okay. Well, thanks for that question. And then do you want to give us a little recap before we start up?
Yes. So week one, Jeffrey Dahmer, we learned about his childhood, where he felt pretty abandoned and neglected by his parents, particularly his mom, after his brother was born. He was into some weird hobbies, like dissolving roadkill in jars and eventually killing the animals himself and dissolving them in jars. He was an alcoholic by age 15 and would do strange things to get attention from his peers.
And the book we're using again is Jeffrey Dahmer, A Bizarre Journey into the Mind of America's Most Tormented Serial Killer by Dr. Joel Norris. All right. So Jeffrey's senior year in high school was probably his worst socially and academically. His parents' marriage was in a shambles. The fighting was awful. And it got to the point that his father moved to a different part of the house and set up a, quote, Goldberg alarm system, which was a wire that hung with keys. And it would make a noise if Joyce crossed into his territory. So, yeah, that just sounds completely immature.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like people kids who have to share a room and they put tape down the middle of the room.
That's what it was. Jeff constantly felt pressure to choose sides between his parents. Lionel finally filed for divorce, citing Joyce's, quote, extensive mental illness, extensive cruelty, and gross neglect of duty as the reasons. So Joyce came right back, of course, and hit him with mental cruelty. Well, Joyce ended up winning, I suppose you could call it, and got a restraining order against Lionel that would prevent him from, quote, molesting or assaulting her in any way or disturbing her or the minor children. And she also got custody of David, so David was the only minor children at that time, and alimony and child support. So, Courtney, let's pick apart this stuff. We haven't talked about a diagnosis for Jeff. I realize that we didn't do that last time.
Yeah, so I think it's hard for most children when their parents get divorced, and it's especially bad when there is this much hostility and turmoil. And I can also imagine it being especially confusing for Jeffrey, having his parents kind of fighting for his support when previously he had felt that neither parent really wanted him. And as for his mom getting custody, I mean, this was the 1970s, and judges almost always sided with the mothers in these cases at that time. And, yeah, we haven't really talked about diagnosis for Jeffrey yet. So he's, you know, been showing some signs of conduct disorder, right, particularly looking at his treatment of animals. He's showed some signs of trauma and anxiety, but there hasn't really been enough information about that to give, like, a specific anxiety or trauma diagnosis, I feel like. But one thing for sure that Jeffrey had at this time was alcohol abuse disorder.
Can you think of very many kids that you've worked with or any at all that showed this type of substance abuse at such a young age? I'm not talking about marijuana. I'm talking about more like alcohol or drugs that completely kind of take you somewhere else.
I would say there have maybe been a few that I've worked with that by, like, high school were into some pretty heavy drug use.
Was it too because of their home life? Was it because they were depressed?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it was both, basically. Like, you know, people use drugs and alcohol often to escape how they're feeling. And oftentimes that does have to do with things going on at home.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is kind of like a more organic disorder, like depression or something like that. But kids don't just start abusing drugs and alcohol because it's fun.
Right.
Like, we think that maybe that's what they're doing, is they're just having fun.
Mm-hmm.
But to get that deep into it, there's something else going on. To this extent,
where, like, it's almost like his life revolves around it.
Right. He needs it, like, first thing in the morning.
So because Jeffrey was now 18, he was no longer considered a minor, and the courts did not require his parents to care for him. Like, they didn't put that in any sort of legal document. David was provided for and was fought for by his mother, but Jeff now felt excluded from the family. He was just finishing school. He was still emotionally just a kid. What do you think, Courtney?
I think that any insecurities that he had about being unloved and unwanted before, particularly by his mother, was pretty much being confirmed right now.
Well, Jeff was a big guy now. He was about 6 feet tall, and he worked out quite a bit with weights. I guess he acted out in bizarre ways, and he had aggressive behavior and dabbled in ritualistic and magical thinking, in quotes. By June of 1978, the house was totally divided. David and his mom were on one side of the house, and his father was on the other. So there was that restraining order, I guess, but I guess they could still share the house. I don't know. It was just he couldn't touch her or the kid, I guess. Lionel eventually went to a hotel to escape the chaos, and pretty soon after that, Joyce moved out. Now, Lionel and Joyce did not communicate this to each other. Lionel did not know that Joyce was gone, and honestly, it does not sound like Joyce cared enough about Jeff to make sure he would be okay. Perhaps I'm being unkind, but that's kind of how it looks. When she left, he had no food, a broken refrigerator, and no money. What the fuck? Courtney, do you think that Jeff, like, thought this was his fault?
You know, Jeffrey had actually been abandoned by both of his parents now. And I believe, if I'm remembering right, it was literally, like, kind of within a day of each other that mm-hmm. they left.
Yeah, I think it was, like, right after Dad left, Joyce was like, well, I'm leaving too.
Right, and no one talked to each other or to Jeff about mm-hmm. it at all. So he just kind of woke up one day and both of his parents had moved out of the house. And so I think Joyce being able to just leave like that speaks a lot about the lack of attachment between Jeff and his mom. Very clearly she had a strong bond with his younger brother, but not with him. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is pretty obvious here. And I think it also shows the overall selfishness of kind of both of Jeffrey's parents. They were both sort of thinking only about themselves and not thinking about how this would affect, you know, their eldest child.
Yeah.
Right? So I believe that Jeffrey probably did wonder what he had done or what it was about him that made his parents stop caring about him.
I mean, at this point, Lionel didn't know that Joyce left, but he mm-hmm. also didn't, for quite a while, check in, as we'll see.
Right. Yeah, Jeff. Exactly. He could have figured it out much sooner.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about borderline personality disorder, and if you think at this point Jeff would qualify. We know he developed it eventually.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's review the criteria for borderline personality disorder and see if he meets that criteria. So, according to the DSM-5, to be diagnosed with BPD, a person must have a pattern of unstable relationships, self-image, and mood, and at least 5 of the following impulsive traits. So, frantic effort to avoid real or imagined abandonment. I'd say yes. Mm-hmm. Unstable and intense relationships.
I mean, I guess if you count the ones with his parents.
Right. Or, like, he would have friends and then he would kind of scare all his friends away.
Right, because he would listen to their heartbeats and feel their pulses.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Persistent inability of sense of, or instability of sense of self, like not really knowing who he is.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Impulsivity in 2 areas that are self-destructive, such as alcohol or drug use, risky sexual behaviors, or reckless driving.
We will see reckless driving.
Right. Mm-hmm. Definitely the alcohol abuse right. is there. Mm-hmm. Recurrent suicidal or self-harm threats or actions. I haven't really seen any we evidence of that.
Right. There mm-hmm. might have been there, but it wasn't noted in the book.
Right. Let's see. Intense emotional reactivity.
Probably.
Yes. So lots of mood swings. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Chronic feelings of emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Inappropriate and intense anger.
Definitely later on.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And transient episodes of paranoia or dissociation.
In the army, I think we see that.
Right. So at this point, at 18, we're at about 6 out of 9. So, yeah, I'd say it's pretty safe that he would meet criteria for BPD.
Well, the author of the book theorizes that Jeff's first feelings of abandonment were about around age 5 or 6 when his mom was pregnant with David. The author feels this may be where Jeff's emotional development stopped. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
Okay. So Jeff is spending his summer month the summer months, you know, after he graduated, pretty much alone in his basement, drinking whatever alcohol he can and working out. His mind is probably reenacting all his abandonment issues and creating fantasies about people who won't leave him. I don't know. I'm just reaching here based on future stuff. I would just imagine that Jeff is just really lonely at this time. He does disclose that the sexual fantasies that he was having at this time were violent, full of control, killing, and mutilation. It has been mentioned that Jeffrey would see a jogger that would go on the same route every day. He was fascinated by this male individual, and he wanted that jogger to be his. One day, he hid behind a shrub or something like that and waited for the jogger to go by, I believe with some sort of baseball bat. He was going to snatch him and bring him home and do what he wanted to do with the jogger. So the day that he did his stakeout was when the jogger did not follow his routine. The jogger was not captured. So if this is a true story, I've always wondered if that jogger knows, you know, who he was, like, because this was kind of like a big thing that came out later on. And if he was like, oh, my God, I used to run by the Dahmer house all the time. That was me. And if he, you know, knew how close he had been to being taken by Jeffrey Dahmer.
Ooh, that would be creepy.
I mean, you would think unless you lived under a rock or, you know, moved away or passed away or something like that, that this particular jogger would be like, shit, that was me. Anyways, that guy was lucky because he didn't go the day that Jeffrey was going to get him. So let's talk about what Jeffrey did do that summer that he was left alone. On June 25th, 1978, Jeffrey saw 19-year-old Stephen Hicks hitchhiking in his neighborhood. He stopped his car and Stephen went in expecting a ride from Jeff. Jeff asked if he wouldn't mind going to his house and hanging out for a bit, maybe having a few drinks since Stephen wasn't in a hurry. So they went to Jeffrey's empty house. They drank beer, listened to music, and talked. Now, Dahmer tells different accounts of what happened that evening. When he was first arrested, he said, quote, he took him home and had homosexual sex with him and was drinking beer and became intoxicated. He states they got into a physical fight because the 19-year-old individual tried to leave and that during the fight, he states he struck the hitchhiker with a barbell. He states the blow of the barbell caused the death of the individual. That's quoted from the book. Some officer said that, I guess. During his trial, though, his story changed. He claimed his first kill was actually in October of 1978, so 4 months after Stephen was last seen living in June. He claimed in this encounter that it was a hitchhiker, but he did not have sex with him and that he did still hit him with a barbell. So regardless of what it sounds like he did altogether, he did kill this individual because that individual wanted to leave him. So the main point is that in one account, he said he had sex with Stephen, and in the other, he said he did not. Stephen Hicks's body has never been, you know, totally found, and there's a good reason for that if what Dahmer says is true about how he got rid of bodies. What are your thoughts, Courtney?
So I think that there are a couple of reasons for Jeffrey changing the story that he told to the police. So changing the detail about having sex with the victim is likely related to feeling ashamed of being a gay man and, you know, wanting to make the crime seem better somehow in the eyes of the police or the jury. And changing between timelines could very easily be impacted by how much alcohol Jeffrey was using and its negative impact on memory.
Right.
I mean, if he was drunk the whole time, like, he could have no idea when things actually happened.
Right. And I'm not sure, but I'm assuming that when he made that confession, he might have been drunk because when they picked him up that night, he was drinking as per usual. So yep. He might have been like June, no, October. No, no.
Exactly.
But all right. So later on, around 3 a.m., Dahmer cut off the legs and arms of Stephen's body. He was drunk. He put the body into plastic bags and put them in the car. And he was going to dump the body somewhere. But he was pulled over by a police officer for driving erratically soon after leaving the house. Remember, he was drunk driving. Anyway, he did do a driving sobriety test, and he passed. The bags of Stephen's body parts were in the car, but the car was not searched, and the cop let him go. Well, this near call or, you know, near getting caught thing freaked Jeff out, and he went back home. He got the bags out of the car and he developed a new plan. He put them into the crawl space, sealed it up, and just tried to forget about them. But it was hot. It was June, and the body did not keep. Huh. So the whole house eventually started to smell of decaying flesh, and he knew he had to do something. His parents may eventually come home and check on him after all. So he tried a few things, stuffing into a drainage pipe, burying the bags, but nothing really worked. So he ended up removing the flesh from the bones like he did to animals when he was young, and he put it into a jar of acid until they dissolved. And then with the bones that were left, he smashed them with a sledgehammer into tiny pieces, and he took those pieces to a rocky cliff area and spread them around. It was near his house. He then burned the wallet and threw the other belongings of Stephen into a river nearby. What do you think, Courtney, was his first kill that we know of?
I mean, it's a milestone, right? And like many first kills that we've talked about, it was impulsive, messy, and driven by intense emotion. You know, if we look at it through a BPD lens, we're looking at Jeffrey's fear of abandonment mixed with his intense anger and shifting into that extreme devaluation of Stephen. So when Stephen was alive and drinking beers with him, it was all rosy and they were going to be in love forever. But then he tried to leave, and so that was unacceptable.
Because this is going to come up later, let's just look at how far Jeffrey was going to not get caught, because he's going to try to plead NGRI.
Right.
He knows what he did was wrong. Mm-hmm. Let's just keep that in mind. Look at all the things he did to hide this body over and over again.
Right.
Eventually dissecting it, melting down parts of it in acid, and then, I mean, he's gone. He went really far compared to a lot of the other serial killers who just dump bodies all over the place.
That's true.
He tried really hard to get rid of the evidence.
Mm-hmm. I might also say, not defending Jeffrey at all, but just making a note, that someone can be sane at one point in time and become insane later.
Sure.
So, like for this kill, he very much clearly knew what he was doing. Mm-hmm. But it's possible that at a later point in time, he was less coherent and less culpable.
Well, I think, and he gets more and more drunk.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So Jeff did not kill for another 13 years that we know of, or so he claims. So, I mean, we see that, you know, sometimes these first kills and there's a big adjustment period where they're coming to terms with what they did. Maybe they have a lot of guilt, shame, fear of getting caught.
Right. And confusion, then, all of it.
Right. So sometimes they do take a long time before they do another one. And for Jeff, he says it was 13 years before he did his next one. But let's still discuss what happened in the meantime, because even though he may not be killing young men, he was still no angel. Jeff was alone in the house for 6 more weeks after he killed Stephen Hicks before his father decided to step by and check in on him. So, Courtney, this is ridiculous. Both his parents totally up and left him. I mean, I get he's 18, but he's still dependent on them. It's not like he had a full-time job and he could pay for an apartment. For some reason, his mom made Jeff promise not to tell Lionel that he was alone. Why do you think she did that?
Self-preservation. I think so that Lionel wouldn't be able to use it against her.
Well, he was pissed. He tried to get the courts to order Joyce to bring David back. He and his new lady, Sherry, moved into the house with Jeff for a time. Jeffrey was enrolled in Ohio State University and headed there in the fall. Now, Jeffrey didn't really change when he got to college. He was still a full-blown alcoholic and struggled to get through a day of classes without drinking. His room while he was in college was stocked with alcohol. He pretty much drank all day. Once he got settled and struggled to make friends, that sentence is weird, but he was drinking a lot, and his drinking habit was expensive. He was constantly out of money. Jeffrey got so desperate to support his booze habit that he started to sell his plasma to the Columbia Blood Bank. It was rumored he also stole items out of dorm rooms to support this habit. Jeffrey pretty much flunked out of college that first quarter he was there. Lionel came and visited him once and saw all of the liquor bottles in his room and decided he may be suited better for the military. Perhaps that could sort him out. Courtney, are you surprised by any of this?
I am not surprised at all. You know, Jeffrey was already a serious alcoholic, and trauma frequently leads to increased substance use. And so Jeffrey had the trauma of being forgotten by his parents, and then the trauma of his first murder, which even if he enjoyed, was still like a big stressor. Mm-hmm. So chances are that those two events, particularly the murder, was kind of all that he could think about for a long time. And so he probably was drinking more to maybe try and drown out some of those memories and those thoughts. Mm-hmm. And then all at this time, right, he didn't have friends or many marketable skills, really. And so being an addict resorted to whatever he needed to do to keep himself drunk. And of course, you know, we all know that the military is the perfect place for traumatized addicts with personality disorders. It's worked out so well in the past.
Do you think, knowing what you know about Jeffrey, that he regretted killing Stephen Hicks? Like he felt remorse for his actions?
That's a good question.
It's kind of tough to tell with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because one would think that part of the reason he was drinking so much was maybe to, like, get over his guilt, you know, for what he did. But maybe he was drinking so much to suppress his impulses to do it again.
Right. Mm. I think it's possible that there were, you know, probably some mixed feelings about it. Like, you know, once it was done, it could have been like, well, I shouldn't have done that. Or like,
yeah, you know, I went too far.
I went too far. But then also,
I didn't mean to kill him with the barbell.
Exactly. I was just acting out of rage and we could have still been friends or whatever. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, right, he was having a lot of those violent sexual fantasies. Right. And so I imagine he also got some enjoyment out of killing Stephen. And that itself may have been kind of scary for him.
Yeah. No one to talk to about it.
Exactly.
It's all by himself.
Right.
For 6 weeks,
mm-hmm.
at least. Well, Lionel and Sherry got married a few months later. In January, Jeff headed to Fort McClellan in Alabama. He chose military policing as his career. I guess it was an intense program and he couldn't handle it. So he changed to a medical specialist and was transferred to Fort Sam Houston in Texas. His training was about 5 weeks long and he learned many things, including different types of medications and their uses. He learned about painkillers, sedatives, and paralytics. After he passed his tests in this discipline, he was sent to Germany. Now, just because he was in the military did not mean he was sober. His bunkmates spoke of his suitcase that opened into a mini bar. Liquor was not allowed on the base, but he snuck it in through this device. Apparently, he liked mixing a martini, putting on his headphones, listening to, quote, headbanger music, and pretty much tuning out everyone and everything else. Quote, he wouldn't move. He wouldn't even go out for chow. He wouldn't get takeout food. He'd drink until he passed out and then wake up and drink some more. There were a lot of people who used to drink, but not like him. That was someone he was in the unit with. Even with his drinking, he was considered a good medic that first year. He did not have any memorabilia in the area of his bunk. Like everyone else had pictures of their families or girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever. He did not get any mail. He was a loner. Some claim he would occasionally go out and visit a prostitute. Really, the only family member he spoke of was his grandmother. He told others that she was the only one who really related to him. They didn't even know he had a brother. Courtney, anything you want to say?
I think all of this is in line with the track that Jeffrey was on. You know, alcoholism leads to bad moods and loneliness, which leads to drinking more alcohol and on. And then not talking about his family, I think, also makes sense because his family abandoned him.
Mm-hmm. What's he going to say?
Right.
Because he makes up stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, I've got a brother, but we don't talk because my mom took him away and left me alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, during his second year in the service, things started to get worse for Jeffrey. He was drinking even more, and when he was sober, he was still kind of funny, and apparently when he had conversations, he said intelligent things. However, when he was getting drunk now, he would go off in a negative way towards homosexuals and people of color. He would try to pick fights this way, but since he wasn't really any bigger than the other men in the barracks, nothing really came of these fights. Dahmer's racist tirades became more and more of a problem as there were black soldiers in his unit. One soldier said that when Jeff was drunk, he would scare him. He knew that he could be dangerous, but when he was sober, he gave him a birthday card. Courtney, homophobia and racism would continue to play a role in his life. Is there anything you'd like to comment on?
So the homophobia makes sense here because Jeffrey clearly struggles with internalized homophobia. And so this means that he has latched onto the social narrative at the time that being gay is wrong, bad, disgusting, etc. And so that results in intense self-hatred because he is gay himself. So that means that he is wrong and bad and disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Which probably made him drink more.
Absolutely. Yep. And, you know, he may have also felt that expressing hatred towards gay people would make others maybe not suspect that he was. The whole idea of, like, if I am really vocal about how much I hate it, they can't possibly think that I could belong to that group. And then as for the racism, I know that down the line, he kind of becomes more, like, attracted outwardly to people of color. But at this time, you know, he may have genuinely really believed what he was saying and just was a racist. Or maybe he felt like racism and homophobia kind of go together. And to sell the homophobia, he had to also act like he was a racist.
I want to say somewhere in the book, it does talk about Lionel being homophobic and racist. And I could be wrong, so I don't want to, like, say that definitively. But suppose that's true. I mean, if he's hearing that at home.
Right, that's where kids learn their beliefs.
Yeah. So Dahmer's binges started to grow longer in duration. So he's just spiraling here. He started to miss work or he'd show up and be drunk, obviously smelling of alcohol. The army decided to put him into rehab. And for the last 6 months of his army stint, he was in a rehab program on the base. He resisted. And the more he resisted, the less freedoms he was allowed. His final 2 months may have been sober months, but they were also like a prison for Jeff. It didn't matter. It was too late for him. He was discharged because of his alcoholism a little over 2 years after he entered the military service. So Dahmer was officially out of the army on March 26, 1981, and he wasn't sure what to do with himself. He had no money, no job. He flunked out of college. He was discharged from the military due to drinking. He was smart. Some sources say his IQ was 140. Others say closer to 120. But at the very least, he was bright. But he was aimless. He decided to go to Florida. He was there for about 6 months working at a sandwich shop. Now, there's a famous murder that happened in Florida while Dahmer was there. It has not officially been tied to him, and it doesn't really fit his later victim profile, but 60-year-old Adam Walsh was abducted in July of that year and murdered, beheaded. Adam Walsh's father is John Walsh, who hosted America's Most Wanted after what happened to his son. Courtney, any thoughts on this twist?
I don't personally believe that Jeffrey was involved in the murder of Adam Walsh. You know, his motives for murder were sexual and related to not wanting to be abandoned. So he wouldn't have any interest in a six-year-old in this way. There was no, like, indication that he was sexually attracted to children.
I think that his Adam Walsh's father agreed with that. But it was still one of those things that was thrown out there. He was there at the time. Apparently there were witnesses that saw one that saw someone that fit Dahmer's profile walking in the same mall that Adam was at, you know, but as I've learned, memory and eyewitness identification is shit.
Right. And I am positive there were probably other serial killers wandering around Florida at that time.
Right. And a blonde 22-year-old man is probably pretty all over the place in Florida.
Right. Especially maybe a gay man who's tall and buff.
Anyhow, that's where we're going to stop for the day. He does get into a little more trouble before his next murders, but we'll talk about that next week.
Yes.
Do you have anything you want to say?
No, I think that's a good place to stop.
Okay. Well, everyone be safe and we will see you next Tuesday.
Bye. Bye.